chapter. The last time we was here, Jacob covered chapter 24. He covered verses 1 through verse 28. I'll pick up, Lord willing, today in verse 29 and finish the rest of the chapter. But as we get to this portion in Genesis, the promised son had been born, Isaac. Not Ishmael. Isaac was the promised son. And in chapter 22, the Lord had charged Abram to offer up his son, his only son. Abram grudgingly did, or we imagine with fear, he did that very thing. Because he knew that the Lord could bring him back from the dead if that's what it took. And the Lord told him, look, I know that you now fear God, seeing that you've not withheld your only son from me. So Abram passed that test. Then we get to chapter 23. At this point, Isaac's pushing 40 years old, and his mother, Sarah, Abraham's wife, passes away. A wife for some 65 plus years of Abram's life that we know of. They were together, one body, a united front, fearing the Lord, serving God in a pagan land. Almost all they seemed to have was each other. So Abram knew the benefits of having a godly wife. And that's why when we get to chapter 24, he takes this searching for a bride for his son Isaac, he searches for a bride for a son, and he doesn't take it lightly. He doesn't take it lightly at all. He's going to great lengths to find a godly bride for his son. Because again, he knew firsthand the joy that a godly wife could bring to a marriage. And he would accept nothing less for his son. You know, he didn't want his son to pick one of the Canaanite women or one of the pagan women who would pull him away from serving his Lord. And Isaac actually followed this same pattern when we get to chapter 28. When we get to chapter 28, Isaac called Jacob, his son, and blessed him and directed him, you must not take a wife from other Canaanite women. Later, Moses is going to instruct them through the Lord. Moses is going to instruct them, and he gives them the reason as to why. Deuteronomy chapter 7, verse 3. You shall not intermarry with them, giving your daughters to their sons, or taking their daughters for your sons, for they will turn away your sons from following me to serve other gods. That was the heart of the issue. They would turn your hearts away from serving me. It wasn't about ethnicity or race. It was everything to do with faith. Even Solomon, in all his wisdom, we're told this in 1 Kings chapter 11. The Lord told him, he had said to the people of Israel, you shall not enter into marriage with them, neither shall they with you, for they will surely turn away your heart and make you serve other gods. Then you get to verse 3. Solomon clung to these foreign women in love. He clung to these women. He had 700 wives who were princesses, 300 concubines, and his wives turned away his heart. Verse 4. For when Solomon was old, his wives turned away his heart after other gods. His heart was not wholly true to the Lord his God, as was the heart of David his father. He went after the Ashtaroths, the Milcoms. He actually built high places for Chemosh and Molech. All these wives he took had pulled him away from the Lord. And Abram don't want this. Abram seems to know this. He just doesn't want it. He actually pulls his trusted servant, his most trusted servant, most likely could be Eliezer. But anyway, he gets his trusted servant and he tells him, you swear to me that you will not take a wife for my son from the daughters of the Canaanite women. That's in verse 3. He made him swear that he would not take a wife for Isaac from other Canaanite women for this very purpose. You know, and you see, the servant here, he's a little bit concerned. Well, what if she don't want to go? That's not on you. You'll be released from this oath. Well, what if they don't want to release her to me? What if the parents won't give her to me or the family won't give her to me? That's not on you. So as he's finding this spouse, as he goes on his way finding this spouse, even today, it's something that requires much prayer and great concern. It's nothing, again, to be taken lightly. And we see Abraham took it very seriously. And when we do, we need to heed the words of Proverbs. Proverbs 31, verse 10 says this, "Charm is deceptive, and beauty is fleeting, but a woman who fears the Lord shall be praised." So when you're looking for a spouse, don't look for beauty. Look for charm. Those things are fleeting. Those things are deceptive. Look for one who fears the Lord. And that was why Ruth was able to come in and be part of the family of God. But Ruth feared the Lord. Rahab feared the Lord. A Canaanite, a Moabite, both fearing the Lord. Both these women worshiped the God of Israel. And so as the time comes, Abraham leans here on his trusted servant to oversee this crucial task. It made me wonder, you know, how we often, we would feel like we would have to be the one to go. We just don't trust anybody else to see to this. You know, this is something that we must do. If we feel like if we're not there, things won't go as they should. In a weird way, we trust ourselves too much. Abraham trusted his servant, but he trusted the Lord more. We see this in verse 7. At the end of verse 7. "He will send his angel before you, and you shall take a wife for my son there." So it was Abraham knew that the Lord was going to guide, or knew the Lord could guide this trusted servant to the very woman, the very girl that was made for his son. He was certain that the Lord would lead the servant in the right way. And this servant here, possibly Eleazar, this servant had a purpose. And his purpose was to do what the master desired. And as we read this, I want to notice the actions of the servants. Ask yourself, are you a good servant? Are you a good and faithful servant? You know, we are similarly servants of the King of Kings. And that's a much greater relationship than Abram had with this servant. And as we'll notice in this chapter, this servant was single-minded. And by that I mean he concentrated on one purpose, one goal. Do we handle our master's business with as much care? So the title of this message is A Single-Minded Servant. So again, Abram grabs his servant, charges him to find a son for his wife. The servant here, you know, kind of gets a few rules, gets the parameters here. What if she don't come? What if her parents won't let her come? Okay, if that's the case, you're relieved from this oath. So then the servant here takes the master's camels, he takes all kinds of gifts, and he goes on his way. He goes to the city of Nahor. He goes to the well, which is where the women would actually come and gather water. And they did this in the evening time. And he prays as he gets there, "Lord, please grant me success today." And he has this prayer that he would ask for water, and the one who would give him water and then also go, you know, get water for his camel, she would be the one. Before he had even finished speaking, this very thing happened with Rebecca. She was very attractive in appearance. And she does exactly what he had prayed that the Lord would show him. But he sits there and just stares at her, just almost in silence, because he's not sure, it seems like, whose family she's from. So then he asks her. And she says, "You know, I'm the daughter of Bethuel, the son of Milcah, whom she bore to Nahor." So then he finds out that basically she is of Nahor. She is of the same family that Abram is from, which is exactly what Abram had wanted. This couldn't have worked out better. This couldn't be working out better for this servant who was charged with this very delicate and crucial task. So then when we get to verse 29, because she runs back and she tells her mother's household about these things. We see that at the end of verse 28. Verse 29, "Rebekah had a brother whose name was Laban. Laban ran out towards the man to the spring. And as soon as he saw the rings and bracelets on his sister's arm and heard the words of Rebekah, his sister, thus the man spoke to me, he went out to the man. And behold, he was standing by the camels. at the spring. He said, "Come on in, O blessed of the Lord. Why do you stand outside? Well, I prepared the house and a place for the camels." So the man came to the house and unharnessed the camels and gave straw and fodder to the camels. And there was water to wash his feet and the feet of the men who were with him. Then food was set before him to eat, but he said, "I will not eat until I have said what I have to say." And they said, "Speak on." So when we get to verse 29 in this chapter, we're introduced to Laban. Laban is Rebekah's brother. He will become a major figure in the following chapters. He will actually remain in the story through chapter 31. Laban. Now it says here that Laban ran out to meet the man. And you know, it's just funny. If you look in verse 17, the servant, when he saw Rebekah, he ran to her. Verse 20, as she gives him water, and she runs back to the well. In verse 28, we see the young woman, Rebekah, running to tell her mother. And here, Laban runs out to meet the guy. This is a running family. You know, they're just running all over the place. Probably ADD before that got popular, I guess. But Laban appears here. When at first reading, Laban ran out to the man, to the spring, and he appears to be hospitable. He appears to be giving and willing to entertain a stranger. But the following chapters are going to paint Laban as a cunning, greedy, self-serving opportunist. And there's actually a hint of that here. There's a hint of his motivations here that his motivations are not pure. We see this in verse 30. What's it say? He ran out to meet the man as soon as he saw the ring and bracelets on his sister's arm. When he saw, some translations say. So when he saw these rings and bracelets, light bulb. He ran out there to meet the guy. This is going to be good. And in verse 33, he brings him in. Well, he goes on. He runs out to meet the man. And when he sees the man, he just, verse 31, "Oh, come on in. Come on in, blessed of the Lord. Why do you stand outside? I've prepared the house and the place for the camels." There's no way he had time to do this. No way he's had time to do this. You know, but come on in. Come on in. And they unharness the camels. They give food and water and straw to the camels. They wash their feet. They prepare a meal. They set it before the servant. And the servant says, "I will not eat. I will not eat until." It was customary in these days to leave business until after the meal. So what's going on here? Well, there's a couple of things that's going on here. A combination of things going on here. This servant, number one, this servant was sent by his master. His duty was to tend to his master's business. And his master's business took precedence over his pleasure. Okay? We are actually called, as Todd mentioned earlier, the doulos of God, or the slaves of God. Do we treat our master's business with the care and zeal pictured here? Does our master's business come before our business? Does our master's business come before our pleasure? We need to ask ourselves these things. The second thing that's going on here, beside the fact that he's going to go on and just get it all out there, I'm going to tell you why I'm here. This is my master's business. This is my duty. The second thing here, I really think he just can't contain the excitement. He's just so excited. It worked out perfectly. He got there on this long journey, maybe 900 miles. Probably took the better part of a month. It couldn't be maybe even more than a month. It just wasn't easy. Showed up at this well site. He saw the woman right off the bat. The Lord led him to the perfect place. He's just brimming with excitement, it seems. He just can't contain it. And so we know who sent him. We know about his prayer that he prayed while he was sitting at the well. But they don't know that. They don't know these things. Rebekah is going to hear these things for the first time as he tells them in verses 34 through 49. He's just so excited, he just can't keep it in. So let's read this. A lot of this is just rehearsing what's already happened, but they don't know it. Verse 34. Well, I will not eat until I've said what I have to say. Well, speak on. I'm Abraham's servant. The Lord has greatly blessed my master, and he's become great. He's given him flocks and herds and silver and gold, male servants, female servants, camels and donkeys. And Sarah, my master's wife, bore him a son to my master when he was old. And to him he has given all that he has. My master made me swear, saying, you shall not take a wife for my son from the daughters of the Canaanites, in whose land I dwell. But you shall go to my father's house and to my clan and take a wife for my son. And I said to my master, perhaps a woman will not follow me. But he said to me, the Lord before whom I have walked will send his angel with you and prosper your way. You shall take a wife for my son from my clan and from my father's house. Then you will be free from my oath when you come up from my clan. And if they will not give her to you, you will be free from my oath. You see, he's just rehearsing why he's there. Verse 42. I came today to the spring and said, oh Lord, oh, the God of my master Abraham, if now you are prospering the way that I go, behold, I'm standing by the spring of water. Let the virgin who comes out to draw water, to whom I shall say, please give me a little water from your jar to drink. And who will say to me, drink, and I will draw for your camels also. Let her be the one to whom the Lord has appointed for my master's son. So he's kind of bringing them in. When I was here today, I got here today, I'm sitting by the spring, and I prayed this prayer to God to show me the one that's for Isaac, or for my master's son. And without question, this Rebecca knows this is her. This is her. Verse 45. Before I finished speaking in my heart, behold, Rebecca came out with a water jar on her shoulder. And she went down to the spring and drew water. And I said to her, please let me drink. She quickly let down her jar from her shoulder and said, drink, and I will give your camels drink also. So I drank, and she gave the camels drink also. Then I asked her, whose daughter are you? And she said, the daughter of Bethuel, Nahor's son, who Milcah born to him. So I put the ring on her nose and the bracelets on her arm. Then I bowed my head and worshiped the Lord and blessed the Lord, the God of my master Abram, who led me by the right way to take the daughter of my master's kinsman for my son. Now then, if you're going to show me steadfast love and faithfulness to my master, tell me. And if not, tell me, that I may turn to the right hand or to the left. You know, he goes on to how great Abraham was, how the Lord had greatly blessed his master. All the credit for Abraham's wealth is given to God. That come from Abraham. You know, it would be easy for a servant to see his master as just this genius with this great business acumen, but I'm almost certain that Abraham had to tell him, no, this is God. God has blessed me. God has prospered me. And God will prosper you in your way to find us a wife for my son. And to this, all the wealth that he has, the flocks, the herd, the silver, the gold, the male servants, he's given all this to his only son. This son is going to inherit all the master's wealth. This son, and this has to give him a little bit of assurance. They're looking at giving their daughter to this guy. She's going to be financially stable. She's going to be okay. And then he goes on in verse 48 and he just talks about how the Lord had led him in the right way. The Lord had led me in the right way to take the daughter of my master's kinsman for a son. Again, who does this servant accredit with the success of this task? He didn't give the credit to his own strategy, his own human wisdom, because that would have been the practical place to go, is to the well when the women come to get water. That's where you're going to find a woman. And so he went to this well, this particular town, looking for a wife. He never takes credit for any of this. It's the Lord who does this. He doesn't say, I was thinking a well would be the perfect place. He surely doesn't attribute this to luck. You know the word luck is nowhere in the Bible? That's because nothing happens by chance. Abraham was great because God blessed him, not luck. He found Rebekah. Their paths crossed because God blessed him, not luck. And the servant rightly credits God for this. The Lord led me by the right way. Led me to the right city, the right well, the right family, the right girl. So he tells him how the Lord's hand is in all this. And then he says, look, tell me. Basically, if you're not going to let her go back with me, tell me that I may turn to the right hand or to the left. Let me know. That's a proverbial expression. It's basically saying, I'll find out what my next course of action is. I'll either go to the right or left. Just let me know if you're not going to send her back with me. Or if she's not willing to go. But even though the servant here would have been freed from this oath. If they would have said no, technically he would have been freed from this oath. She refused to go, or they wouldn't give her to him. But he doesn't give up. He doesn't give up as quickly as we give up often. He doesn't give up. He wasn't willing to quit so easily. You know, because Abraham's brother, Nahor, had 12 sons. We read that at the end of chapter 22. 12 sons. So what he's going to do is, I can't find a wife for Isaac here in the house of Bethuel, then I will go to the other relatives of Nahor, the other sons of Nahor looking for a wife. I'm not just going to quit at the first house I pop on. First time I walk up and witness to somebody, if they say no, we don't just quit. So then after they hear this, verse 50, then Laban and Bethuel answered and said, the thing has come from the Lord. We cannot speak to you, bad or good. Behold, Rebekah is before you. Take her and go. And let her be the wife of your master's son as the Lord has spoken. So we see here in verse 50, we'll see it again in verse 55, Laban actually begins acting as Rebekah's representative. Why did Laban play such a key role in this marriage proposal? Some insist that Rebekah's father had died, which is odd because you see Bethuel, which is Rebekah's father's name here in verse 50. Even with that mention, some still claim that this is the son. This is a son named Bethuel. It's another brother to Laban. Josephus actually says that. Josephus actually says this seems to be brothers, whom Laban was the eldest and chief, and Bethuel, the father, had sometime been dead. I really don't see it that way. In verse 53, when you look at there, you're going to see the servant bring out jewelry, silver and gold, and garments, gave them to Rebekah. He also gave to her brother gifts. He doesn't give it to her brothers. So if they both were there, you would think that the servant would have gave her brothers gifts. But so I don't think that this Bethuel is a brother. I think this Bethuel is the father. Some think Laban's craftiness at this point was well known, and his father used that skill to negotiate. Now, my opinion's a little simpler. It seems like when it was the custom of this day to include the brothers of the bride in the marriage proposal. If you would turn to chapter 34 of Genesis. We're going to see here, Dinah, one of the daughters of Leah, who she had born to Jacob, was actually violated. And they come and they want to take, you know, Jacob's daughter to be their wife. And as we get to verse 11, Shechem, he's the one who's wanting to bring Dinah in to be his wife, also said to her father, Jacob, and her brothers, we know the 11, at this point I think it's just the 11 sons of Jacob, to her brothers, let me find favor in your eyes, and whatever you say to me, I will give. Ask me for a great bride price and a gift as you will, and I will give you whatever you say to me. Only give me the young woman to be my wife. So Shechem here goes to the father and the brothers. And look at verse 13. It's the sons of Jacob who answer. Not Jacob. The sons of Jacob are the one who answer Shechem and his father Hamor deceitfully because they had defiled their sister Dinah. But anyway, you get the point. Here it seems like the Father and the sons are all part of this proposal. And it's not uncommon for the sons to be making requests. So I think Bethuel is alive, and I think Laban is there with him, just like the case of Jacob and his son, and he's actually making some requests. I don't think that's strange at all. I sure don't think that Bethuel has passed away at this point. So as we move on, when Abraham's servants heard their words, he bowed himself. When he heard that basically that she's free to go, you take her and you go, he bowed himself to the earth before the Lord. And the servant brought out jewelry and silver and gold and garments and gave them to Rebekah. He also gave to her brother, Laban, and to her mother costly ornaments. And he and the men who were with him ate. See, we about done forgot they hadn't ate at this point. You know, that's several verses up. But they actually eat now. They drank and they spent the night there. When they arose in the morning, he said, "Send me away to my master." He had rode probably 900 miles. He was there one day. But he accomplished his task and he's fixing to head right back. One day, "Send me away to my master." Verse 55. Her brother and her mother said, "Let the young woman remain with us a while, at least 10 days. After that, she may go." Verse 56. But he said to them, "Do not delay me, since the Lord has prospered my way. Send me away that I may go to my master." You know, he gets the answer he's looking for. He showers over them with gifts. They get ready to go the next morning. And then they're like, at least let her stay here 10 days. It's some possibilities here. You know, they hadn't seen Abraham and Sarah since they left. So logically, they realize they may never see their sister again. I don't necessarily think that's the case. Knowing what we know of Laban, he probably believed there was more gold, silver, and jewelry to be had. And he thought maybe he had begun to question, did he let her go too cheap? You know, as shrewd as Laban was, you know, later on, he sharpens his skill set. He does this very thing with Jacob. When Jacob, the son whom they're going to have, goes to visit him, he serves them 7 years. He gives them the wrong sister. "Oh, you want Rachel. Work another 7 years." And then he works another 7 years, and then he makes them work longer for the flocks. And Jacob actually says, "He changed my wages 10 times. He's always, if he promised them the spotted flock, he would give them the stripe. He just always changed it in trying to get them to stay around. And Jacob actually says that Laban intended on sending him away empty-handed. That was Laban's goal, to send him away empty-handed. "If God wasn't with me, you would have sent me away empty-handed." So more than likely, knowing what we know, Laban's 10-day request was possibly just a way for him to change the terms and squeeze a few more riches from this deal. Not sure about that, but that's what it seems. So they decide, let's just ask Rebekah. If she wants to hang around, if she wants to go. So verse 57, "Let us call the young woman and ask her." So they call Rebekah and said to her, "Will you go with this man?" "I will go." So they sent away Rebekah, her sister, and her nurse, and Abraham's servant with his men. Verse 59 said they sent away Rebekah, their sister, and her nurse. Just out of curiosity, we're not given her name here, but we are in other places of Scripture. Before I give you the name, would you know who it is? There's no nod. So Rebekah's nurse is the name Deborah. We get this in chapter 35, verse 8. Deborah, Rebekah's nurse, dies, and she was buried under the oak of Bethuel. I'm sorry, under the oak of Bethel. And it actually, the oak there is named the oak of weeping. So it seems as if Deborah had a dear place in their life and they mourned for her when she died. So here, Deborah, this nurse, leaves with Rebekah. And then they bless Rebekah and they said to her, "Our sister, may you become thousands of 10,000s and may your offspring possess the gate of those who hate him." Well, this language, where did they get this from? This language seems similar to the language that was used in chapter 22. If you look back in chapter 22, verse 17, I will surely bless you and will multiply your offspring as the stars of heaven and as the sand that is on the seashore. And your offspring shall possess the gate of his enemies. And in your offspring shall all the nations of the earth be blessed because you've obeyed my voice. This was a promise that the Lord made to Abraham on the heels of Abraham offering up his only son. I say that to say it seems as if this servant shared with them a lot more than what we have in these three paragraphs. They knew a lot more than we're given here. They knew more than what we have recorded. They knew the promises that God had made to Isaac. Then we move on. They leave, and Rebekah, on this long journey, you can only imagine that Rebekah was asking this servant all sorts of questions about Isaac. But Rebekah and the young woman arose or rode on the camels and followed the man. Thus the servant took Rebekah and went his way. Now Isaac had returned from Baal Lahai-Roah and was dwelling in the Negev. And Isaac went out to meditate in the field toward evening, and he lifted up his eyes and saw, and behold, there were camels coming. And Rebekah lifted up her eyes, and when she saw Isaac, she dismounted from the camel and said to the servant, "Who is that man walking in the field to meet us?" And the servant said, "It's my master. It is my master." So she took her veil and covered herself. And the servant told Isaac all the things that he had done. Then Isaac brought her into the tent of Sarah his mother and took Rebekah, and she became his wife, and he loved her. So Isaac was comforted after his mother's death. So we see here that once she sees Isaac coming, she took this veil, she covered herself. Don't take this to mean that all women in the Middle East are always veiled. Don't take it to read that way. We know in chapter 12, when Abram and Sarah go to Egypt, it said the Egyptians saw the woman was very beautiful. So it appears that she didn't have a veil covering everything but her eyes. That wasn't the case. When the servant here sees Rebekah at the well, he saw she was very attractive. You know, we see that. We also see where, you know, in 1 Samuel, when Hannah is praying, Eli looks on and all he sees is her mouth moving. And he thinks she's drunk. Well, how could he see that if she had a veil on? So it doesn't mean all women always wore a veil. That would be misapplying this verse. And actually in Genesis 38, at times wearing a veil was part of a harlot's attire. So there's some custom things that it's hard to really pin down what happened. I actually looked to see if this is where we get our veil during a wedding. And man, you can go all over the place on that one. So basically she got a veil, covered her face, goes to meet Isaac. And so we end the Abram-Sarah phase. Now that has ended. And we're transitioning now into the Isaac-Rebekah section in Genesis. The seed, the promised one, is coming. And we see it just unfolding. And Abram was wise when he would not let his son take a wife from the land of Canaan. He wanted a godly wife for his son. And he went to great lengths to do that. So as we see what this servant has done here, and this made me think, Todd just went over this in the last hour, the servant completes this task, brings the bride to Isaac, and you don't see where Isaac said thanks. Just like, you know, in the last hour. You know, that was his duty. That was his job. He was just doing his job. So let us be as diligent in our service to the king as this servant was in his service. Let us place his business before ours. Let us follow the example of Jesus. When Jesus said, "For I come down from heaven not to do my own will, but the will of him who sent me." Let us place his will before ours. And if before you question, well, that's Jesus, does everyone have to do the will of the Father? Well, Jesus says this in Matthew 7. It's actually pretty scary. "Not everyone who says to me, 'Lord, Lord,' will enter the kingdom of heaven, but the one who does the will of my Father who is in heaven." Believers will do the will of their Father in heaven. Actually, in John 8, Jesus says this, "You are of your father, the devil, and your will It's do your father's desires. So Jesus seems to make this contrast. You're either serving the Lord or you're serving Satan. And by serving yourself, you're not serving the Lord. So you're doing the will, you're doing the will of the devil. So you're either doing the will of the devil or you're doing the will of the Father. And I pray that we'll be faithful servants to our Master, faithful servants to the Lord as blood-bought slaves, that we will take much care, tenacity. We don't quit as easy as we quit. We put His will and desires above ours, above our pleasures, and above our business. So I could actually title this Marks of a Godly Servant. Would have went right in line with what you did earlier also. But anyway, it's a fantastic chapter. As we draw to an end, we're going to see next week in chapter 25, I think. Jacob has it. So would please stand. Collins, would you close us out?